Joining me today is Courtney Moore, logistician for Program Manager Ground-Based Air Defense. She is the wrangler for the Light Marine Air Defense Integrated System, or as we call it, LMATIS. Welcome to the show, Courtney.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a bit about your role as a logistician at the PEO?
Of course. So I think it's very specific as an acquisition logistician, which I know we'll probably get into later on about the differences. But for LMATIS, there's two, a JUONS program and a program of record, ACAT-4T program. And so each of those have similar but also different responsibilities. Mostly with the JUONS is maintaining operational readiness for the systems that are already out in the fleet. So we have an AAO of 12. We have five of them deployed right now on the Muse. And they are, since they are an urgent need, it's really how can we keep those maintained and sustained as long as possible until our program of record systems are able to come out and replace those older systems.
Okay.
So that's the main responsibility we have right now. It really is a team effort with something like a JUONS, tracking, shipping, maintaining, like I said, and making sure that the Marines have everything that they need for that urgent need.
So JUONS, can you tell us what that acronym is? And ACAT?
Right. Correct. So yes, the JUONS is our Joint Urgent Operational Needs. So okay. Any urgent capability, this was a joint one with other services that required a capability for a movable, light, maybe UAS system, counter UAS system
okay.
to track it with an EW capability as well. And then our ACAT would be our acquisition category. So for a program of record, our acquisition category is 4T was our designation.
We all know the acronyms are a tough one.
Yes.
We love them.
For all of us.
Yeah,
so.
I was going to say just the Marine Corps, but I think it's DOD-wide.
It's everywhere.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can't escape.
You just want to shorten the words.
Yes.
So we usually think of logistics in terms of warehouses, shipping, which you did say it is that, but an acquisition logistics is something completely different. Can you explain it in layman's terms for someone like me that wouldn't
sure.
understand?
And I wouldn't say completely different, but I do think this is an important question that I get asked a lot, and I'm sure logisticians everywhere get asked a lot. Acquisition logisticians get asked a lot. So acquisition logisticians are focusing on managing the 12 integrated product support elements. So our 12 IPSEs, and one of those 12 IPSEs is packaging, handling, storage, and transportation, which is what I think most people are going to think of as corporate logistics, getting something from point A to point B and all that comes with that. But for us, that's only 1/12, literally, of what we have to manage within the entire life cycle of a program. So we have things like maintenance and maintainability and sustainability, which we've talked about briefly, and supply support, training, how are we teaching the Marines how to operate and use the equipment as well as maintain it based on the strategies we've incorporated. Supply support, publications, all of the documents that we have to produce that are acquisition documents, but they are for the fleet
okay.
so that they can use them. I think a lot of people with acquisitions think of all the documents, our acquisition strategy and memorandums and things that we use internally to SysCom, but there is a whole set of documents that we are developing that are for the Marines to use, telling them how to use equipment and what to do with certain equipment, things like that.
So for those types of manuals, do you work closely with the engineering teams as well when you're developing those? Because they're not just logistics manuals, correct?
Of course,
yeah.
So logistics touches every competency. We all touch all competencies, right? But logistics and engineering always go hand in hand.
Okay.
So when you're developing any sort of, maybe it's a technical manual for an operator or a maintainer, that is embedded with the engineers. How are you guys building this, A, if it's a capability that we're building ourselves organically to the Marine Corps, and then how would us, if there's an integrator, are they going to fix it in their ways? So then we have to draw that back to the Marines, who has the capability, number one, what MOS are we going to assign to use this manual, who has the capability to use this manual, so then that ties into more of our elements in logistics.
How did you get into logistics?
It's a great question. So I grew up in the area with a lot of people that I knew working and supporting the DOD in some capacity. So for me, it was just kind of an easy, I didn't really think of anything else
okay.
as I got out of college. And I started as a junior analyst, as a contractor here in Quantico, supporting Systems Command. And I bounced back from logistics to, I was a program analyst for a bit, then back to logistics. And I started to realize the longer I was there that I really did just like logistics of all the other competencies that I had exposure to. And I kept with that. And then I was in the entry-level employee program here at Syscom via the NADP, which is the Naval Acquisition Development Program. So a lot of people are in that program. It's a great program to really get people at all levels of your career and with their foot in the door into Syscom if they hadn't been already. So I was in that program, and then that set me up for success within Syscom, and then I was placed in GBAD.
And you've been there ever
since?
And
I've been there ever since, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
So is this what you actually saw yourself doing? I know that you were around DOD growing up, but actually being a logistician?
It's not, I wouldn't say that I knew what an acquisition logistician was growing up. So in fairness, I don't think a lot of eight-year-olds maybe know what an acquisition logistician is. So I'll say I'm good on that. But not exactly. I think it is interesting, though, how your experiences and your surroundings really influence what you end up wanting to do. I wouldn't say that I grew up in my heart saying this is what I wanted to do, because I really didn't know what acquisition was. I didn't know what Syscom was. I didn't know all the things that went into it. And so, but as I had that experience and I realized that I had skills that could be good for this job and that I could make a difference in this way, in a way that I never thought I could do, I found that this ended up being something that I wanted to do later on in my career, more so than, I guess, when you ask someone when they're a child what they want to do.
Yeah.
But if you know any eight-year-olds who say acquisition logistician, then I'd be happy to talk to them about it. But one of the best jobs that I could have asked for, and I'm happy to have it.
I like what you said, that it's interesting to see like how your surroundings turn into the type of job that you end up doing, because how I ended up in public affairs has nothing to do with like what I went to school for.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works out for the best.
Yeah, you got to do what really you like does. Or you're going to be miserable.
Yep.
The NADP program, that's the one where they'll send you to different locations too, right? To kind of get a feel of all the different competencies.
And which is great, because it exposes you specifically for the logistics path within NADP. You get your time at LOGCOM, either the Albany or the Barstow location, which is great. Unfortunately, mine got cut short a little bit during COVID, but the general people in the NADP do have great experiences getting to travel a lot more places than maybe I got to.
Speaking of LOGCOM, do you work closely with LOGCOM, or is it kind of once our systems have made it through the acquisition process and they're in sustainment, then do they go over to LOGCOM?
We have a very special relationship with LOGCOM now, is that they have been tasked with being our integrator of the Juon systems as a whole now, and our sustainment manager.
Okay.
So the way we talk about LOGCOM in that way is different than most people would think about LOGCOM as organic sustainment to the Marine Corps that we will have with our program of record system. So for Juons, they are tasked with implementing all of the ECPs, and as our Juons come off the Muse and are ready for being refurbished, because that's our only capability to fix things right now, LOGCOM will do that for us.
Okay.
So they are in every part, every aspect of that life cycle for the Juons right now. That will shift as the program of record comes on and we start to try and have more, I would say, regular means of incorporating LOGCOM into our sustainment strategy, vice what we're doing right now with the Juons, which is only because it's an urgent need. That's not necessarily something we would do.
It's a special circumstance.
Yeah. We wouldn't do it for a major acquisition program other than this urgent need.
You provide logistics support for PMGBAD or LMATIS within PMGBAD. Can you give us an overview of the systems that you support or in an overview of the program?
So for us, we have three product managers. The one that LMATIS falls under is Future Weapons Systems, and Future Weapons Systems consists of Big MATIS, which is the MATIS that I think most people are familiar with, integrated on a JLTV, fancy, very nice, pretty big, and then LMATIS, which is the light version of our MATIS, and that is integrated on the UTV right now.
Okay.
So that our Juons is on the UTV, and then our program of record will be integrated onto a ULTV as those come out and are fielded. So there's other hardware and software differences between the Juons and the Program of Record, but both of them fulfill a general same requirement of a mobile counter UAS capability for rotary and fixed wing aircrafts, low air defense, and EW capabilities for certain UAS as well.
Where does logistic planning start? I'm going to assume in the beginning.
The logistics will start in the beginning as soon as the requirement is truly recognized and defined. That is when logistics planning needs to happen. As I mentioned with our IPS elements, a lot of those are incorporating design sustainability, like sustaining engineering and design interface into what we're creating, so that by the time you get to logistics at the end, where people think it is,
yes,
you're not scrambling around trying to figure out how to maintain something. It truly does have to start at the beginning. Not to be confused with, you know, the sustainment section of the life cycle, which is the biggest cost that people forget about, but it does start in the beginning, and it is a cycle. People say life cycle logistician a lot. I don't know if you've heard that. Because it is just a continuous circle, and we're very fortunate with the LMATIS, for example, that we get to see that circle just continue to go around. So as the Juons comes off, we can learn from that, and then we begin our program of record, and it just continues that cycle of what have we learned from the previous requirements, where are there gaps, how can we mitigate that for our future system, and then the cycle just continues.
Okay, we said that logistics definitely starts at the beginning. Does it tie in as well into how we're writing the contracts, or is logistics included in our contracts?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's a great question too, especially in writing requirements for any sort of contract, you would always want some sort of logistician or somebody who can write toward maintenance requirements, and not even just maintenance. Often with OEMs, original or manufacturers, you need to make sure that if they're building a requirement for you, because it's not you yourself, it's not the Marine Corps building it, that they are building in those requirements of sustaining engineering, design interface, any sort of classification requirements you want to have. And the PHS&T, which going back to the corporate logistics idea, is that people want to make sure that, hey, that this might be a really great product and you might deliver and hit all of the engineering goals that we asked for in our PWS, but I can't move it, or the Marines can't operate it. We don't have an MOS that would know how to do that, or it's just a concept that we can't train to. And so all those things you have to consider and more when writing your contracts and choosing who will fulfill those requirements. Yeah. But we do have transportability requirements, and the LMATIS is deployed mostly is on the Muse. That is what it's for. So it does need to be able to, yes, get on the ship. It has requirements for aircrafts that can carry it. And then, of course, because it's integrated onto a ULTV and a UTV, those vehicles themselves have their own requirements that have to be fulfilled. So LMATIS is a collection of other programs, TAMSons, that we pull together, and then we fill some of our own requirement gaps with our own capabilities.
I would think that makes the logistics side of it maybe a little bit easier on y'all's end.
Sometimes.
Okay.
So sure, it is nice to have things organic to the Marine Corps, like the ULTV and the UTV. We use daggers. We use things that other programs are using, which means, yes, a maintenance concept is already out there. Great for us. We can use their maintenance concept. And if we need help with something or their testing results, we can use all of the data that other program offices use, which is great.
You can rely on the team.
Right. Yeah. But then sometimes, you know, their requirements aren't ours, and they're not always going to cross over in the same way. And if the system that we are using, that another program uses, is their item exit date is before ours, or their maintenance strategy includes MOSs that aren't our MOSs or something like that, then we do need to tailor our strategy based on their strategies.
Okay, so we've talked about the MOSs that are incorporated in the logistics plan. And as I understand it, maintenance is a big part of the logistics world. Can you tell me a bit more about the maintenance of your systems?
Of course. So with the Juons, and I said this, I guess, every time, how special the Juons is. So the Juons is mostly replace and repair. So if something does go down, we are replacing it, and then we are either having the OEM fix it or LAWCOM organically is trying to fix it. Okay. We are learning the longer that the G1 systems are out there how to repair certain aspects differently, especially since we've switched integrators recently. But going forward with the program of record, and this ties into what I talked about with the circle, we're learning more about the G1s, which can influence our maintenance planning for program of record. Now, the program of record, we're pre-milestone C right now, so we have time, but we are in the process of identifying, you know, our LORA. We're going through and updating our level of repair analysis. We are working through our depot source of repair to identify how a lot of our end items and components are going to be maintained and sustained in the long run. Now, we're using a lot of different data points for that, but the great thing about G1s is we already know, based on the G1s, the high failure items. So we can already identify without any analysis, just based on the Marine's use of it. You know, this is going to break more than this. We need spares of this.
You're more aware of the risks.
Yeah. So it's easier to fill some of those gaps that other programs maybe necessarily wouldn't have that historical data to work off of.
Your maintenance side of it, wouldn't it just be, is it just the maintenance of the equipment on the UTV, or does the maintenance also include the maintenance of the vehicle?
That's such a great question. Yeah. Truly, because that's something that we have to work out right now, actually,
for
the program of record. Those are conversations that we're having real time, trying to figure out. This goes back to what I was saying with, it's nice to use equipment that is organic to the Marine Corps, but sometimes their maintenance strategy doesn't align with ours. So, for instance, the ULTV, that's not necessarily, it's not like the JLTV that intends to be around for years.
Yes.
The ULTV will eventually be replaced. It's not necessarily capability that they are going to spend a lot of time maintaining in the same way that we need to spend a lot of time maintaining and sustaining the LMATIS. So that's the conversations that we're having right now, is trying to figure out for the ULTV specifically, and then other capabilities that the Marine Corps uses, you know, how long are those systems staying? What's their maintenance strategy for each of those TAMs?
Yes.
And then how can we incorporate that into our overall LMATIS system maintenance strategy?
Because if the ULTV, if we only have that for a couple years, then in 2 years, you're going to have to pull the LMATIS off.
Right. As that base capability, the ULTV, the vehicle platform, whether it's a ULTV or something new in the future, we will always be reintegrating the LMATIS equipment onto that mobile light vehicle platform, whatever it may be, and tailoring our maintenance strategy to the maintenance strategy of the vehicle platform itself.
When they're, let's say, the next ULTV, whatever comes after that, do they consider the system integration side before selecting, like when building the requirements for that vehicle?
That's a great question. We've done that. PMLTV has done that. And I'm sure, I know you had Major Viana on previously, one of these episodes. He could definitely talk more about that. But they are bringing on a high power variant ULTV, which is a ULTV specific for programs like GBAD and other programs in the Marine Corps that need a high-powered ULTV to integrate their systems on specific to our requirements.
Okay.
So there is a difference than the base ULTV, which they're calling their logistics variant, and then the high-power variant, which fulfills more of GBAD's requirements and the other programs that need a ULTV with higher power to operate all of the things they're putting on and integrating onto that vehicle.
You don't think on the backside how many different teams are working together to make sure
it's a lot.
This one capability
is
getting out to Marines. You mentioned earlier that LMATIS is an ACAT 4T program. I'm going to assume that the logistics for that size of a program differs completely from radios. Can you talk about that? Or are they all kind of the same? It's the baseline.
Good question about, so that brings us back to, just acquisitions in general.
Yeah.
And so the ACAT 4T, like I mentioned before, is anything that doesn't fall within the realms of your ACAT 1 through 3 programs or isn't an AAP or an urgent need. And so the T is standing for test. So we do operational tests and evaluation within that ACAT 4. And so it's different than something like a G1s for sure, but all ACATs within the DODI will reference your regulatory and statutory requirements. So we're still following the acquisition pathway as an ACAT 4 the same way an ACAT 1, 2, and 3 would. It's just that at a smaller scale, our MDA is going to be different. So for our ACAT 4 tier, our MDA was designated at our program manager level, where Mattis, which is an ACAT 2, was designated at the PEO's level.
Okay.
And so you'll see the MDA differ based on the ACAT size, and then your, like I said, a few statutory and regulatory requirements throughout the acquisition process might differ as well.
Okay. An MDA, which
Milestone Decision Authority. Excuse me.
Just gonna throw in them all in.
Yep. Oh, that's good. That's good.
We need
it
to
helps me remember them too.
I'm like, it's acronym soup.
Yep.
We should make a game of it where you put the acronym out.
Please don't.
And you have to figure out what it is. There was a quote that we shared from General Omar Bradley in season 2. Amateurs talk strategy, but professionals talk logistics. Can you talk to that and just explain why logistics is important, especially with the future of the Corps?
Yes, and I really liked that when I heard it on the first episode that you guys talked about that on. Very interesting. I think you could interpret it multiple different ways. So I'm sure if you asked a non-logistician, they're going to give you maybe a different answer. But when it comes to supporting the warfighter and the strategy that we're building to support the warfighter, that's one thing. And then there's the execution of that strategy, which is a lot of times how I see logistics panning out. How are we getting them? We've made our strategy. This is how we're fulfilling our requirement. And then this is how we're getting it to them and how they're actually using it, which is the longer end of the tail, the more expensive end of the tail, like I said. And so I think maybe in that quote, you can think of it as people are really looking at logistics as the execution of the strategy more than all the planning that we do, you know, milestone A through fielding.
I like that way of thinking about it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we've talked a bit about you and your work in the program and logistics, but now let's talk about you. I heard that you're a Hokie. For our listeners who don't know what that is, can you explain?
Well, first of all, I want to find out how you figured that out, unless you saw my car with the stickers on it. But yes, I did go to Virginia Tech, and as any Hokie would tell you, if people say, what's a Hokie, you're going to say, I am. That is the answer. I am a Hokie. Technically, it's a fighting turkey, right? It's our mascot.
Oh, okay.
Our mascot used to be the fighting gobblers at some point. We've evolved into, now it's fighting turkey. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, like, gobbling at games. And then, obviously, have you seen the Hokie bird? Our
no.
mascot. Okay. Maybe I should have brought a picture, but if you want to just Google the Hokie bird.
Okay.
It is our mascot. He's great. We love our mascot and we love Virginia Tech.
The first time I heard Hokie was when our previous public affairs director was here and he said the word Hokie and I thought he was talking about like an Oklahoma team.
Oh.
And he was like, Morgan, that is Virginia Tech. And I was like, I'm new here.
There's quite a few Hokies in GBAD. We have our nice little Virginia Tech GBAD group going on. It's
That's nice.
Nice. Yeah.
I feel like I gravitate like the LSU
oh, yeah?
teams. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would say I'm an LSU fan, but.
Right. Well, I'm not a football fan. I'm just a Virginia Tech fan.
Okay.
So
fine. Cool.
There's a distinction.
We won't have to like get into a fight
okay.
or anything.
Yeah, yeah. No. We're good.
Yeah. Okay. Now that we all know what a Hokie is, tell us a bit more about you. I know you grew up around here, but and how you got to PEOLS, but just tell us about you.
Yeah, so I did grow up here in Stafford. My family lives here. My husband's family lives down in Richmond. So
okay.
we actually live in Fredericksburg now, which is a nice medium between my family and his family. So we like that a lot. My sister lives here. We just have a lot of family in Virginia, so we really do like this area. Like I said, I'm a Hokie. My husband is also a Hokie. We have our little Hokie family. A lot of my in-laws are Hokies. So
the whole family.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. We have a lot of stickers. We do enjoy going to football games, even though I said I wasn't a football fan. There's a difference between being a fan of going to games and being a fan of watching
of the game.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? So. But yes, we are a family of Hokies, and yeah, I know it's probably not as exciting. A lot of people on the show have lived a lot of places. They talk about a lot of the experiences they've had. moving and living in different places, which is great. And, you know, I love being here and I love being where my family is.
I think there's something comforting in that, though, because, you know, you always have them here to, like, lean on, and you just have a support system.
It is great. Yeah. Having us all together, it makes going home at the end of the day just so much better to know that everyone is right here.
Yeah. I like that. I do sometimes miss my family. Only sometimes.
Sometimes is good.
I'm just kidding. I miss them all the time. Now for the exciting part. The lightning round questions. Are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
What is your favorite emoji?
Oh my goodness. I'm not sure I use emojis enough, so I'm going to have to say the laughing, crying one. That's horridly boring.
I like it.
But it's probably the one I use the most. Or the side eye. The like kind of like smirk. Bat, it's like a smirk, and then they're looking to the left, and I'm like, oh. Because you can interpret it so many different ways.
Yeah, bombastic side eye.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Okay. If you could teleport anywhere, where would you go?
You know, that's a great question. In the whole wide world, my husband and I do really want to go to Scotland. It is a place that we haven't been before. I think a nice little trip to Scotland, if my teleportation means I'm like going on vacation there.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Then yep. Yes. Then that.
And
that
you can bring a
nice.
Plus one.
Okay. Then yeah. I'm bringing my husband. If I'm just teleporting to like check in and I have to be alone, then I could just teleport right home. I don't need to go anywhere else.
Well, so. I respect it.
Yeah.
Morning person or night owl?
Definitely night owl.
Okay.
Which is crazy. It's conflicting because I enjoy like the morning air.
Yes.
You know, when you're driving to work with the windows down, you're like, oh, it's a great day. There's so much ahead of me. But I'm just always tired. But I'm not tired at night. So by default, I'm a night person.
What's a TV show, book, movie, or podcast you'd recommend?
This podcast, definitely.
Thank you.
Of the three, I have three podcasts that I regularly listen to. It would be this one. And the other one I would recommend, which is very specific group of people out there who might be interested in this, but I'm a diehard Survivor fan. And so I listen to the Survivor podcast. It's called On Fire with Jeff Probst. And I'm only laughing because there's probably like two people in the world, maybe, who know what I'm talking about. But it's a great podcast.
Okay.
If you're a Survivor fan.
No.
No, that's okay. Someone out there is. And they didn't know about it. And now they do.
I mean, yeah. What's the other one you listen to? Or is it
this
just
one?
This one?
This one, On Fire with Jeff Probst. And then, oh, my third one is, it's called The Teachings of Mark Comer, which is a very nice podcast. It's actually a sermon from a church in Portland, and he records his sermons. So it's very comforting to listen to that on my way into work sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. With the windows down.
With the windows mm-hmm. down and the morning air.
Yes.
Just how you calm down before coming to SysCom.
It's calm here.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Of course. It was a privilege to be here. Thank you guys so much.
I'm excited to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. So.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Equipping the Core. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or on social media. We'd love to hear from you.